Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Welcome to the food scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here today with the husband and wife team behind Fish's Eddie. That's fisheseddie.com. It's a dinerware, glassware, everythingware warehouse of everything. I mean, that place is just chock full of hoarding, almost. Julie Gaines, Dave Lenovitz, thanks for being on air.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So, want to talk about your humble beginnings. Where did you two grow up? And this is, we're going to talk about that felicitous moment in 86. We're going to lead up to it. But where did you two grow up? What was the food? What was the art? What were you surrounded by?
Well, I actually grew up in Staten Island, and it was all Italian.
Yeah.
So, I grew up with a lot of, you know, and Southern Italian. So, I grew up with a lot of heavy Italian food, a lot of restaurants, good restaurants out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dave?
And I grew up in Huntington, Long Island, and I was raised by my parents, unusually. and my mom, it was in the early 60s in Long Island, on Long Island. And she was a martini drinking, pill popping mom. That's probably too much information.
Yeah, that is too much information.
But we're big amongst moms, so you better watch what you're saying.
Really?
I love my mom.
Yeah. So, Staten Island, Italian, you're used to, you know, not white tablecloth, red sauce, you know, big chunky plates.
Yeah.
Pill popping.
Sorry about that.
Martini glasses, something
yes,
like that.
Big martini.
You guys are big in the glassware. But, you know, throughout all these years, did you guys focus on the food or did you focus on what the food came on?
Actually, when we started... We were in the food service industry
because
it was commercial. It is commercial dinnerware, but ironically, it wasn't about food.
Yeah,
I mean, we talked to people that go way back with us, and they remember when food service had nothing to do with food. So the whole food industry sort of happened around us.
Yeah, yeah,
which worked out.
Well, I mean, there was this moment in '86. You went to Syracuse.
Yes.
What did you study there?
Well, I studied art and art history.
Yeah,
and yeah, I moved in on 15th Street, and a couple days after I moved in, I walked down the block and there was this very cute little store, and Dave was there working at the register, stocking the shelves, and we met, and he fell in love with me immediately.
Immediately, yes.
Yeah, wooden Indian antiques and glassware.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, uh-huh. Excellent. You didn't care about the glassware or the antiques at all, either?
Well, it is a true story. Yeah. He had this really cool messenger bag, and it was made by Coach Leather. And then I found out that, you know, Coach Leather, they're family relatives of his. And I thought the bag was really cool, and Dave was really cool. And the store it was so eclectic. There was everything in there. And I studied art history. And I guess I just responded to it, and Dave and I hit it off right away. We just started talking about things we liked together.
Well, it sounds like you like the bag more than me. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it worked out.
Well, okay. Do you still have the bag?
I do.
Yeah, he has the bag.
Oh, okay, I was about to say, if that was gone, she still has you.
No, then has the bag.
You know what she chose.
Yeah.
It's between me and the bag.
Yeah. So, 86, you guys met, found this kinship amongst, well, not just bags, but glassware and antiques, because after that, you two started forging and collecting.
Yeah.
And it brought you traveling around the greater Northeast.
We got a blue pickup, right?
Yeah, we got an old blue pickup, and we just started traveling the country, going to flea markets.
Yeah.
It was we're getting up at like 4 in the morning, hitting the road.
Yeah, the only bad memories I have is for a short time, we got a dog, a Dalmatian, who was completely in love with Dave.
Yeah.
So he got to sit in the front. So for a while, we took a couple trips where I was sitting in the bed of the truck.
Yeah.
So, and then I'd see the silhouette of the dog looking at Dave lovingly.
I thought you liked it back there.
No, I didn't like it. It hurt.
Oh, okay.
It was bumpy.
Well, let's get back to the markets. You go to Pennsylvania. You go to, like, Amish markets.
Yeah.
What were you looking for? I mean, was it anything specific?
We both share the same sort of aesthetic sense. And we were just looking for things that were, you know, odd, quirky, not expensive. We collected a lot of folky paintings and thrift shop paintings. And we collected a lot of dishware, vintage dishware, which we both loved, but not so much for the food aspect, but what was on it, the designs. We really responded to the silhouettes and the designs and how it was like a slice of American history. Stuff was great.
We kind of just bought what we liked. It wasn't really, we didn't really have trained eyes, I guess. I mean, we weren't pickers, I guess, or something, but we bought what we liked.
We weren't, which I think has a lot to do with where Fish's Eddie is at now. It's not, you know, there's not, it's not the result of focus groups and savvy designers. It's just real stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, when you guys, you know, moved in together, eventually married, did you have one set of dishware and you had another and those two?
No, but we each had our own takeout menus.
We don't eat on dishes at home. Is that bad to say? Maybe I shouldn't say
that. No, we don't have time. We're always
in the
store.
But you eat on every dish at the store just to test it out.
But, we didn't have a lot of anything. We started collecting together. We both were sort of blank canvases, and we just joined forces. We were both looking for something, and we had so much in common, and we had a lot of fun, and we're a lot alike, so it just sort of worked out. It was really lucky that I moved in on that block.
Do you remember some of these diamonds in the rough, some of these treasures that you dug through and found in these early days?
Well, the Bowery in those days was all restaurant supplies. Of course, now it's, you know, it's expensive restaurants and hotels and apartments. But we started going down to those basements, and we would come up with bushels of, stuff, Alexander Girard dishes for La Fonda del Sol, and a lot of railroad stuff. And we were really beside ourselves. We were going through, we would just load up bushels frantically because the owners of the restaurant supplies, basically we were doing them a favor by carting it away.
Yeah.
And that's really how we started seriously getting into this.
So you mentioned La Fonda del Sol, which just had its, you know, resurgence over the past couple of years, a linchpin of Joe Baum's restaurants in New York. What other classic restaurants did you find plates and dishware from?
The Newarker.
The Newarker, Joe Baum's first restaurant at Newark Restaurant.
Oh, wow.
At Newark, at Idlewild. It was at the airport. Yeah. Was it?
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, I mean, and we've been into, you know, we were into the basement of the 21 Club, the speakeasy. There's a speakeasy down there, and we've been in basements of the Helmsley Palace. And
the Harvard Club.
The Harvard Club.
People call us. And
once we got a little reputation and we were small and there was no competition or anything, people were finding out that they wanted to get rid of their dishes. Like, the Harvard Club called and said, please take it. And, you know, we were getting these match strikers and really cool stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But couldn't afford to eat at those restaurants.
Oh, no. They wouldn't even let us in.
Yeah.
We had to go in the back door.
Yeah. They saw our SAT scores.
Yeah. Where did you put all this stuff? I mean, it must have been such epic, monumental restaurants.
Seriously, our apartment.
Yeah.
It was everywhere. There were stacks of stuff everywhere. The bathtub, the kit, everywhere. We got a little apartment on, what street was it?
Third Avenue?
It was... Third and what?
Third and 21st.
Third and 21st, and the place where we stacked every little square inch with dishes.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have it, and then we got our first storage space in Bush Terminal, I think it was.
I think so.
And when did the original Fish's Eddie open, and where?
Was it 80?
It was on, it was in 86, and it was on 17th Street. And in those days, you could just walk into a little store and walk out with a lease. So we did. And we sort of discovered the power of, you know, recognition, and we called New York Magazine. It was actually Corky Pollan was the editor of Best Bets, and we called her up, and she came to the store, and within the next week or two, she gave us, I think it was a full page about the store and the window, and it was so exciting because we made the rent and we got money to go buy more things, and that really, we were just feeling it out. We had no plan.
I mean, you had an art history, well, art school background. Uh-huh. Dave, what was your background?
I actually didn't go to college, but I joined the Navy when I was young and had an experience there. And then I came out and I was trying to find myself. I moved to New York City and I asked my my father's cousin who owned the wood kneading if I could have a job. I was trying to find myself. I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And he let me in, and eventually I started managing the store. It was a tiny operation, but and that's how I got to that spot.
And having an art degree doesn't mean I wasn't equally as lost.
Well, 500 square feet. You must have stacked the store like you stacked your apartment. Just kind of cluttered it up.
Yeah. Well, we were finding it in bushels. And
yeah.
It was really in crates and bushels. A lot of it was from the turn of the century, so it was packed in hay. Because that's how they used to pack it.
Straw.
In hay. Straw. Yeah. But they would deliver it. It would the railroads would go right into the factories. Is that how it worked?
Yeah, and they wouldn't there were no boxes or bushels. They would actually just pack the dishes in the railroad car in straw.
Yeah.
And you know, it was really odd. We saw a lot of trucks like that in the beginning of our career. We'd get tractor trailers packed in straw. It was really weird and crazy.
I mean, it's a totally different time. It's,
yeah. So what kind of brands? I mean, growing up in Syracuse, you were right near Syracuse, China.
Yeah, that was a big...
So were you trying to find your Syracuse, China of New York City? Were you, you know, looking for something specific when you were going out and searching for dishware?
Well, when we were looking, when we were going through these basements in the Bowery, there was only ever a handful of great American commercial manufacturers of restaurant china. So it was, there was Buffalo China, and there was Shenango China, and Viking Glassware, and Syracuse. And all these guys over the years, we were there at their, as they closed their doors. But that's how, even though I went to school in Syracuse, and I was very familiar with Syracuse China, and I've even like dug through their dumpsters, you know, once or twice, but more for like art projects. But when Dave and I went into the basements of the Bowery, we would see old Syracuse China from the turn of the century. So we started making trips up there all the time.
Now, this china, very unadorned, maybe had the name of a restaurant, a small logo, but it was true Americana. What made it so special? Was it that it wasn't over the top? Was it that it was well crafted? Was it that it was American made?
All of those, yeah. I think that covers. I mean, it was just, it struck us. It hit our eye. It was so Americana. It was so, turn of the century.
Well, Americans, I think Americans make the best china. It's really made with love. I mean, if you look at some of the old photos, and there's even some footage, and the way they put the handles on and decorate the, it's really one way to explain to people the history of this country, you know, because it was made for old roadside diners and clubs and institutions. And then Dave recently just got catalogs. How many did you?
We got about 100 catalogs from an old company, Shenango China, and it was their art catalogs of every pattern they ever made, and the books are no words.
Yeah, I mean, you got to see them. There's the original, and of course this is way before computers, so they're hand drawn in the books, and there's like Howard Johnson's and the Holiday Inn, like original one.
That's even later though. But I mean, it's really very exotic collection. We're thrilled. We feel very lucky to have it in our possession.
Yeah,
they're sitting in the store right now upstairs.
So talking about seeing the design, seeing history of America through these kind of textile designs, what were some of the patterns that you were seeing?
As Julie was saying, it's a lot of diners, a lot of clubs, institutions, schools, shipping companies, railroads,
banks.
It was just anything across the country. A lot of people, I guess, had the money, or the companies were more apt to be able to do a small custom run.
Well, they would do small runs. Like if you had a little restaurant in the Midwest somewhere, you could call one of these guys and get mugs and plates and creamers, and the shapes also were so beautiful, and they're not made anymore. You would get something proprietary for your restaurant, and you didn't have to order the way you have to go offshore now and get tractor containers, literally.
Yeah.
So that's all the stuff we were getting. There were so many different patterns.
Well, for example, one pattern I just saw in the book was from 1923. They're all dated, and this one was from 1923, and it was Atlas Dog Training School. And it had a picture of like a dog with a top hat and a cane.
Yeah.
And they had that put on the dish. And
yeah.
It was like a dog.
But there's sanatoriums. We're getting much stuff. Like sanatoriums where, which was really like a spa at the turn of the century.
Yeah.
Ladies' lunch. We have a lot of old YMCA. Those things are,
gorgeous.
Do you ever see clients of older restaurants come in searching for those things? I was going to say people that went to the sanatorium got out and, looking to furnish their apartment, but do you ever see people looking for these relics of their past?
Yeah, there's a whole army of collectors out there. Really, we just put a bunch of items online, and people are just coming out of the woodwork for it. It's really incredible, the desire to have that stuff.
Yeah, it's the kind of customer we actually have a special, fondness for, because they really appreciate what we appreciate. Not that we don't appreciate and love all the designs and the new things that we do, and everything that we do now is rooted in what we found.
Yeah.
But the customers that come out for that original stuff.
Yeah. What's a minimum order that you can get on like a mug these days?
A custom run?
Yeah.
It's in the hundreds, several hundreds.
Yeah.
No, it's like 1,800.
1,200.
Yeah, 1,800. And that's begging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you guys do a lot of customization or proprietary.
Mostly now. Yeah.
Yeah. Is it still all American, though?
No, it's not. And a lot of it is. We keep as much made in America as we can, but we're all over now. We're in, we're in England and Mexico and China and India. We're really
Colombia.
But the one thing we did, and that was like a turning point at Fish's Eddie several years ago, was it was definitely an arduous job to keep the quality up and make that change, and not make it a big deal. Like, we kept the quality of the dishes up, and it was a big deal.
It's very important to us, though, to maintain that that quality that we have been so accustomed to.
Because it's vitrified, it's not porous, it's heavy stuff. I mean, we really stand on the dishes to reach something. We don't bring ladders out.
So you mean literally, not proverbially?
Yeah. We stand on stacks of dishes all the time to reach stuff.
I feel like that's a great, old school slogan poster, don't tread on me, or I believe in America, we stand on our dishes.
Right.
And see a photo of the two of you standing.
Actually, you're
dishes.
A genius. I need a pen.
Well, this is going to be on radio. You can just listen
to
it again.
Yeah, that's perfect.
On that, because I don't think I'm going to be able to say anything that genius again, we're going to take a quick break.
Okay, perfect.
You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. We'll be right back.
Sponsored by S. Wallace Edwards and Sons. Summertime is not the only time when barbecue is welcome. At S. Wallace Edwards and Sons, Sam Edwards has been working his magic on ribs, briskets, thick-cooked pulled pork, and much, much more. Add a few of their sides and the party is complete. Entertaining has never been so easy. To order, go to virginiatraditions.com.
Hey, and welcome back to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here today with David Lenovitz and Julie Gaines of Fish's Eddie, and Silka, sitting in the corner. We were just talking about, Americana and not compromising. I think a great spirit of not compromising yourselves was your transition of the store down to Hudson and Perry Street. What was it like taking that original location and moving it into what was the heart of the artistic community in New York City?
Well, we actually found the store we were just riding our bike, and we the landlord was Bill Gottlieb. I don't know if you know. This guy was, he was just as eccentric. He was a fixture in the West Village, and he actually owned a lot. He told Dave and I, I'm going to buy everything in the meatpacking district. And, you know, and he did. And now, you know, you can, he gets a lot of press now, too. I mean, he passed away, but his whole family's. But we just were riding by and we saw that store. And it definitely had a great vibe because a White Horse Tavern was on the corner. And it was a great location. And we opened up, but we didn't realize how great it was. It ended up, we would go in at 1 o'clock in the afternoon and stay there till 3, 4 in the morning. And it, there was so many, there's so many cool people hanging around. Like Suzanne Vega used to come in, and Gregory Hines and Julian Schnabel came in one day, and he got all these plates, and we weren't sure who he was. And then Dave went and delivered it in the truck. Dave came back. He goes, you're not going to believe where I just delivered these dishes.
It was a very exotic studio.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just... It's the building that he built that giant...
The Pink Palace.
But he was breaking them up to use in his paintings.
How did you feel about that? I mean, were you giving him broken plates or you were giving him...
It was a combination, broken and together. We didn't care, you know, as long as he was paying, he could do whatever he wanted with them. But we subsequently learned that he's a gigantic artist and he was putting the plates in the dish and in the work. And it was, you know, you can see it all over the world. And
but we put a little bench outside, not right in front of the store, but remember across... right outside the store, and it became a hub. And I don't think we were so young, I don't think we understood, you know, there was a lot of greatness around us and so great energy, and everybody came in the store. It was a hangout. It was a real hangout. People met there. It was a hangout.
Yeah, it feels very, sounds very New York, very Manhattan. And I think, you know, a great idol of that is Diane Keaton, who was also a customer of yours. So it's like she kind of signified what that was too.
Yeah, it's but we were spending our mornings going in the Bowery and fishing out these bushels of really great stuff, and then, you know, some of the best times were actually putting it out, because you find a little, you know, you make a little pyramid of these creamers with this incredible Aztec pattern from some place in Yosemite. And, you know, and then all these really cool people are coming in and they're looking at it. And it was, they were really fun times. And we were also kid free. So.
And it was also a time when you could just go in. We saw the store as we were running by on our bike. And the next thing we know, we're sitting with the landlord in his office, which was a liquor store.
Yeah, Bill Gottlieb's.
And we walked out with a lease.
Yeah.
And it was 2 seconds, and I don't know how we did it.
So we let the lease on 17th Street just run out, because this was it. Like, this was really, this was the right audience. The West Village in the 80s, that was absolutely the right audience for us. They got it. They totally got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what did the move to 19th Street mean? I mean, obviously a bigger store. It's a fountainhead. It's that corner. What is that building?
It's the Gorham Silver Company building. It was the first mixed-use building in Manhattan for commercial and residential. It's a very storied, beautiful building.
It's the kind of thing, like, I think if we were older and thought about it, we might not have done it.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, I really, it's like marriage.
Yeah.
You have to jump into it. But
at the same time, we talk about a first, you know, storefront at 500 square feet. And recently, you just bumped it up to 4,500. So... it was a good transition.
It was a great transition, and it's a really, we're so lucky to be in that building. It's just perfect for us. We feel like we've grown up there. It's just magical. I mean, we love it. It's our home. I couldn't see us any other place.
Yeah. Whereas you had all these artists, you know, cajoling in the West Village, you brought artists into your 19th Street store, and have collaborated with a lot on, you know, dinnerware. Who were some of your first?
Well, Cynthia Rowley was one of our first, and we were working with Nicole Miller, and, you know, we work with Todd Oldham now. We're actually working with Milton Glaser. We're doing some really cool stuff right now.
And you've worked with Roz Chastain.
She's awesome. Yeah, we're doing some great stuff, and then we also, we're working with the New York Public Library. They're doing an exhibit coming up, Lunch in New York, with all those menus and things, and we do stuff with Food Bank and Mario. But I think people like to work with us because we don't compromise the quality, and they can be as creative as they want. It's not like going to a big box retailer where they have to water it down and listen to a lot of different opinions. We really like artists to be artists.
Well, what did Cynthia Rowley do? It was the Fashion Plate series.
Yeah. Yes.
What was that line?
It was little drawings of little fashion models. It was really cute. It was a cute pattern. It was a great pattern. Yeah, I miss it.
And then Charlie Harper, is it?
Charlie Harper through Todd Oldham.
Yeah.
Charlie Harper did a bunch of science books in the 50s for the public schools in the United States. And Todd discovered him and kind of got the package, the estate, and the beautiful, protected it very well. And Julie and Todd are very good friends. So Todd thought that was a perfect vehicle for us to roll out that pattern.
Yeah. Excellent. Who are upcoming artists that you're excited about?
Well, Milton, definitely. Yeah. We're working with Lada Jansdotter.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a great pattern with her that we're doing. And then one of the most exciting patterns is Todd's doing the next generation of Charlie Harper, which is the birds. We're doing the birds, which people have been anxiously waiting for. We're also doing really well with textiles right now. So we're really expanding our product line, too.
Yeah. So customizing, and not just for yourselves. Mary Batali, and we'll talk about the connection, approached you, or you approached him, I'm not sure, to do a dinnerware line for him. Now, how did that all come about?
You're talking about the food bank?
No. I mean,
originally.
Back in the day, yeah. The bold black lettering, the tiny vegetables.
Yeah. Well, Mario's wife is Dave's first cousin, Susie.
That's correct, yes. And Mario married my first cousin, so that's our connection to Mario.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a great guy, and we do all kinds of things.
It happened at a dinner party at their house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's amazing just to hear how a lot of this, it's not happenstance. I mean, it's karma at a point. Going into that store, riding by another storefront, familiar ties, that all these things, come together to create Fishes
Well, it is all in the family. Dave's sister actually designs all of Mario's restaurants. She's done every single logo for him. She really is. She's done a lot of work for him. She does all his cookbooks, every cookbook. So it's definitely all in the family.
So doing line with Mario, did you have a lot of other chefs, restaurants in New York approaching you to do smaller custom lines for them?
We're working with Danny Myers right now. We're doing a few other chefs. And
we're not doing custom patterns, though. We're working with them. We sell to restaurants a lot. We are working with a lot of restaurateurs, and that's another part of the business. I mean, it makes sense. We sell to restaurants, too.
Yeah. So, I mean, like distributors in the food businesses, you guys are mediating, what the food comes on. Because prior to that, who were the plate sellers in New York? Who were the people that people got, dishware from?
Well, like institutional sellers down the Bowery, like Balter Sales and King Supply. And most of them are kind of out of business now, though, because the real estate was more valuable than their business ever was.
Yeah, there are a lot of... Patricia Fields was originally a restaurant supply down there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, all those guys are... They're expensive restaurants and lobbies of apartment buildings.
Yeah. So yeah. Where have all the good dishes gone?
Fishes Eddie.
Of course. But, I mean, the manufacturers are gone, too.
The
Viking Glass, Syracuse.
They're all gone. It's actually, most of it's made in China.
Yeah.
Most of it's made in China, yeah.
So when did these things close and why?
Again, because their real estate was more valuable than their business. And then they probably from the 90s on.
But the manufacturers started closing little by little because, first of all, no businesses were ordering small amounts of proprietary anymore because it was costly. So that's all that stuff we were finding. And then the big chains like Olive Garden and those guys, they would just go offshore. And just because of overseas competition, they just started closing one by one. So it was a huge change in the industry, and it trickled down to us.
Yeah. Who are the biggest plate manufacturers in the world right now?
There's Homer Laughlin. That's an American-made company.
But they're the last one standing, and they're standing because they make Fiesta ware. So they're down to like a small portion of their business is food service. They're really about Fiesta ware, which is not commercial use.
Yeah. But
and then
the majority going overseas... and you guys not wanting to compromise, your original mantra and mission statement. I mean, it must have been hard and taken some time to, scout out Mexico and scout out,
We did. We traveled to a lot of places and worked with a lot of factories. And it in the beginning, we didn't think we were going to pull it off. We thought because they didn't have the quality that we were demanding. But eventually, after working with the factory and the designers, we got it down to what we wanted. And they produced what we needed.
So this is a true case of think global, shop local.
Yeah, but I mean, we weren't we never thought that would happen to us.
Yeah. You
know, our heads were a little bit in the sand.
Well, we were trying to stay till American made as long as we could, but it meant us staying in business. I mean,
yeah.
We had to stay
in business. Have to look for jobs.
Yeah, yeah.
And that wasn't going to work.
This all kind of hit in, what, 2008?
Earlier than that.
Late
90s? Probably around like 2001, 2002 is when like things got a little hairy.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So, and you, not to bring back somber times, I mean, you had an Upper West Side, an Upper East Side, East Hampton. I lived right near the Brooklyn location.
Yeah, well, that was the first thing we did when we decided, let's just go back, and we believed in the brand. We worked really hard to build it, and we love it. And we to go back to square one and figure out how to do this and be global, we just retracted and closed all the stores. The one store that we would still have, we actually did lose the lease, which was the Upper West Side.
Yeah.
But we had to go retract and go back to home base, which was 19th Street.
Yeah.
And but in that one store, we're doing more business in the one than we did in five.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So business is through the roof right now.
It's because people will travel for your travels and for all your hard work, you know?
Well, also, outsourcing meant the ability to be more creative. Like, honestly, the Charlie Harper dishes that we're doing with Todd, we could never have done those in domestic manufacturers.
Yeah.
Yeah, and even a lot of the stuff that we have, you know, made in Mexico. I mean, we could never... American manufacturing was limiting.
Yeah. I don't know whether or not it was made in America, but it's definitely Brooklynese. This wonderful, you know, line that you did... it was a competition, actually, right?
Yeah, we do an annual competition at Pratt, which is really, it's something that's close to our heart. We love it. We've been doing it for a while. And that was the first place winner 2 years ago.
Yeah, Jordan Awan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, was that Jordan? Jordan didn't do Brooklynese. Jordan did the Brooklyn pattern.
Oh, the Brooklyn pattern. Okay.
Yeah.
But you had, well, obviously Jordan, too, who's, I think, what, the creative director, art director?
Yeah, he's
at
New Yorker, yeah.
So you've had wonderful people to contribute and collaborate with. But this annual thing that you have at Pratt, what are some of the other patterns that have come out?
Well, we did the Brooklynese. We have it's called the intervention pattern, and it's sort of obnoxious sayings around a mug, like, you're not perky or sweaty, you know, things like that. I mean, it's a very funny pattern. And we just had the competition this year, and the winner is, I love it, the subject matter was politics, and the winner did a Teddy Roosevelt design, which is pretty funny. And then another winner said, it says, let them eat cake. But then it says, we are the 99% all around.
You don't think it's too soon for the Teddy Roosevelt thing?
Very funny.
I don't get the Teddy thing, but we'll see how it goes.
Excellent. My dad looks like Teddy Roosevelt.
Does he?
So,
really?
Yeah, he even has a diastema, that little gap. Yeah,
I'm a Teddy fan.
Yeah, so I'll bring him in someday.
Okay.
Maybe he could be your Teddy.
Yeah, we'll need a character the day it comes out.
He's retired. He can do that kind of stuff. I mean, from the Brooklynese to one of my favorites, it's the Heroes of the Torah.
Yeah.
Yeah, where do these ideas come from?
They come from Julie's beautiful little head right there.
No, that's not true. It's really a collaboration. First of all, we have great people at the store. We have such a good team.
Yeah.
Silke and Sarah. And we have so many... I always describe the store now as sort of like a moody teenager, and it has its own personality, and we're just trying to make it happy.
Yeah,
really.
It feels very Claire Danes, very my so-called life sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a collaboration. Everybody gets involved. Everybody, but then we do have a point of view, and everybody buys into it and contributes to it.
Yeah. So I mean, point of view. Going back to your initial idea of what Fish's Eddie was, are there great new American talents in dishware, in plates? Any local talents that are making things that you're trying to bring in?
Well, Lotta. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's definitely a local talent. And I would say Todd's a local talent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there aren't the manufacturers here anymore.
There aren't the manufacturers here, except, you know, Homer Lachlan in Ohio. And we do work with them.
Yeah.
We do a lot with them. In fact, we have the green band pattern, which you've seen a million times. Actually, it's right there. and they make the classic green band pattern. They've made it for how many years?
120.
Yeah, and we carry it. It is what we have at home. Actually, it's the most beautiful, I think, classic, versatile pattern. It's just, you've seen it everywhere. It's like meeting an old friend every time you see it.
Yeah, and is that your best seller?
No, it's not the bestseller, but it's definitely very appreciated.
Yeah, it's a kind of a classic, but it's not. It's for a particular group. I mean, it's kind of the old New Yorker guy would gravitate to it.
But people mix and match a lot, and this was not necessarily by design, too, because when we were bringing those bushels up from the basements of the Bowery, we were bringing in, it was all mixed. It was just everything that you can imagine was in there. So people started mixing and matching. We didn't sit around and say, let's try to get people to mix and match.
Yeah.
So that's sort of how that happened.
Oh, well, let's explain the mix and match, too, because that whole section to the back left where, I mean, it's just a mosh pot of everything. Is that stuff that you're trying to get rid of, kind of like the restaurants inviting you in to unload their basements?
Well, maybe. I mean, I don't know if it's get rid of. It's people love it. You know, they love digging.
Yeah.
They really love the adventure of what they're going to discover. It's a kind of a discovery. There's an area in the store that's just,
yeah,
what am I going to find?
You're giving them the true Fish's Eddie experience,
yeah, exactly,
by doing that.
Yeah.
And now Fish's Eddie, the name. What's it all about?
It's named after the Fish family on a tributary of the Delaware. And a lot of towns up there are named after the families. Like there's Fish's Eddie, Long Eddie, Hale Eddie, and they're eddies in the river, and the town was founded by the family, and they just named it after the family.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah, we have a letter from a fellow named Hiram. Oh, no, his last name is Fish, and his great-great-great-grandfather was Hiram Fish from, like, the late 1600s that was one of the founders of the town. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very beautiful out there.
The best compliment I think we've ever got, one time somebody sent us a snapshot of the sign, Fish's Eddie, and they sent it to the store, and they said, did you know they named a town after your store? So that was a great compliment.
Yeah, I don't think it can get better than that. So we're just going to end the show on that note. Thank you, Dave
and Julie, for being here. Thank you so much. Yeah.
And if you've never been to Fish's Eddie, but the town named after the store or the store itself, stop by fisheseddie.com on 19th Street, right there at Broadway. You've been listening to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.com. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkell. Hoping to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.